Go ahead and begin. I'm glad to have you here today. My name is Edward Myers. I've been at Harding for 20 years now, and for a number of years directed the program across the hall called the CAMT. Now it was called Harding School of Biblical Studies at that time. It's now our Center for Advanced Ministry Training, which has both a baccalaureate and a master's degree available in our study. And delighted to have you here with us today. I want to begin with a prayer. Father, thank you for the privileges that we have to serve. Help us to honor you in all that we do, and that this day our learning process might be something that benefits each of us as we continue our journey in life. In the name of Jesus we pray. Amen. These two classes, and that's this one this hour and then the second hour, there's not a third class on this particular series, is entitled Leadership, A New Paradigm. And the reason I've titled that is I want you to be aware of the fact that there is a vacuum, I think, that has been missing in many ways in our churches. Now, I want you to understand something. I grew up in the church. My father was a preacher of the gospel. I have a twin brother who's a preacher of the gospel. I have a brother-in-law who's a preacher of the gospel. I don't take swats at the church at all. In fact, I think it's the beautiful bride of Christ, and I don't know about you, but my bride is beautiful, and I don't talk ugly about her. So when I talk about any deficit we might have, I do so from a heart of love and wanting to make some necessary corrections that might be beneficial to us. What I want to do, or what I don't want to do, first of all, is what I want to let you know is that I'm not going to be going through 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1 as it relates to qualifications for elders in the local church. That's a good study, and I think it's a valuable study. I rather suspect that most of us have been through studies like that before. What I want to do is go a little bit further than that and kind of take the thought of John Maxwell in his work, where he says about leadership is influence. It's as simple as that. Then he takes the idea and says, leadership also relates to everyone. I've got a book in my area that talks about this, that says, if you're a parent and raise children, you're a leader. I like that, because I think it says something significant. And yet I want you to be aware of the fact that George Barna takes a little bit of issue with what Maxwell says, and says something that's helped me tweak just a little bit of this when he says the following. To be an effective leader, a leader must have influence. But influence is the byproduct of leadership. It's not synonymous with it. You can have influence in a person's life without leading him anywhere. Now, I like that because it makes us go back and evaluate for a minute exactly what we talk about when we talk about influence, and yet it seems to me that Barna also has a little bit of deficit, because a leader is a person who is out front. A leader is a person who has a following. All right? In fact, in John and Dave Ferguson's book called Exponential, they've got 12 indicators that leadership is lacking. And they start with this little phrase, everything rises or falls on leadership. It's kind of like a church can never do any better than its leaders. And I think that is important to keep in mind too. But I want to just run through these right quick and just let you think about these for a second, because they say if you're going to be a leader, here are some indicators that leadership may be lacking. Number one, I wait for someone to tell me what to do rather than take initiative myself. Well, that's pretty impressive as well, because if you have to wait, you're not leading. You're being more a follower. Number two, I spend too much time talking about how things should be different. Number three, I blame the context or surrounding or other people for my current situation. We're going to talk a little bit about the blame game a little bit later on, and how that oftentimes interferes with what we're trying to accomplish in the local church. Number four, I'm more concerned about being cool or accepted than doing the right thing. Critical for the world in which we live, because far too many times we want to be accepted rather than doing what is right, even if it means swimming against the stream. Number five, I seek consensus rather than casting vision for a preferable future. Number six, I'm not taking any significant risks. I seek consensus rather than casting vision for a preferable future. And that's pretty important too. It happened a few years ago that, as far as I'm concerned, in our nation, we had some leaders who would do this. Let me see which way the wind's blowing. Then I'll tell you what I believe about where we should go. And to me, it seems like that's the sheep telling the shepherds what to do. All right? I'm not against shepherds listening to their sheep. We're going to talk a little bit about that involvement of everybody. But at the same time, when you're a leader, you cast the vision. You're the one who says, here's where we need to go. Number six, I'm not taking any significant risks. Taking risk is a difficult task in our world today. I think maybe for a lot of us, because maybe you were raised like me. I was raised that to fail was a bad thing. All right? So the one thing I made sure that I didn't do was fail in something that I wanted to try, but as a result, I never accomplished it either. You know? And yet there's not a person, one of the greatest leaders there was who built the largest company in the world, Sam Walton, took risk and made a lot of failures. John Maxwell has a book entitled Failing Forward. I just like the title itself. It's a great book. I've read it twice. I'm probably going to need to read it a few more times so I can really learn how to do that. But it's learning from your mistakes. I'm convinced almost that that might be one of the number one paralyzing factors in our churches. I really am. But I'll try to talk some more about that a little bit later if I have time. John Maxwell, Failing Forward. Number seven, I accept the status quo as the way it's always been and the way it always will be. If you're satisfied, you'll never improve. If you're overweight but satisfied with it, you'll never lose weight. Plain and simple. I said that because that really involves me. You know, when I got dissatisfied with the fact that my clothes really weren't shrinking, you know, I did something about it. But it was only then that I did something about it. Number eight, I start protecting my reputation instead of opening myself up to opposition. Here's what I think they mean by that. You've got to be able to listen to opposing views. If you're a leader, you don't want just yes men. All right? I like to put it this way. I want somebody who will tell me the truth, period. And sometimes we don't like that. I remember one time on an occasion when I was visiting with a person that I was working with, actually working for, and he asked my advice about something. And when I gave him my advice, because I really thought that's what he wanted to know, you know, he just threw one wall-eyed fit up one side and down the other. And when he finished, I said, hey, look, if you'd have just wanted me to agree with you, why didn't you say in the beginning, hey, Edward, look, I want you to agree with me about this. Here's my idea. And if you don't agree with me, don't really give me your opinion. And I, if you want me to, I'll do that. Well, he got the point. And we still stayed friends, by the way. Or I guess I should say I kept my job. All right. Number nine, I procrastinate to avoid making a tough call. Brian Tracy has a book entitled Eat That Frog. It's on procrastination. He begins by saying there's an old Arabian story that says when you wake up in the morning, the first thing you need to do is eat the ugliest frog you can find, knowing that nothing more horrible will happen to you the rest of the day. I like that. I worked with a group of elders at a church one time. Good men, love the Lord, godly men. And after I'd been there for a little while, they asked me if I would take the time to go through their files and help get them in a little bit of order. And I said, fine, I'll be glad to do so. So I went in one day and started going through the files. And they had a file folder that was better than 6 inches thick on things that had been tabled. Some that went back for years. I'm talking about people who wrote them asking for support, this and that, you know. What the deal was is they hated to say no so much. They just procrastinated. They hated to say no that they just tabled it. You know, it seems like to me that sometimes when Jesus says, let your yes be yes and let your no be no, and he said, he is either for me or against me, and somebody says, I hadn't decided, you have to say, yes, you have. Yes, you have. Now, I'm not talking about waiting and praying for wisdom, evaluating what needs to be done, doing your due diligence, but I am talking about the significance and importance of making the decision and going on. Somebody, there we go back again for the circle. Somebody says, well, what if I make the wrong decision? All right, here's a good one for you. Correct it. All right? Correct it. But see, once again, we have to say, well, I failed. Okay, what else? There's only been one person that I've known of in my entire, that I know in my entire life, who never failed. And y'all know him too. All right? Because we read about him in our book. All right? Number 10, I talk to others about the problem rather than taking it to the person responsible. I talk to others about the problem rather than taking it to the person responsible. Matthew 18 says, if you got problems with somebody, you go talk to them. And as leaders, elders or otherwise, that also means you need to follow through with that as well. I had an elder in a congregation over in Memphis where I worked who had a real good way of doing this. And I'll share with you this little story so that it might illustrate this point. One day at church, we were just in the hallway, and he said, Edward, has so-and-so come and talk to you? And I said, no. Why is that? He said, no. Never mind. I said, well, does he need to talk to me? He said, well, he said he's going to talk to you about something. I said, what? He said, if he wants to talk to you about it, he can. Well, a few months later, that came up again. And finally, I said, hey, Jerry, wait a minute. Don't do me that way. He said, Edward, look, so-and-so said he had a problem with something you said or did, and I asked him if he had talked with you. And he said, no, he had not. And he said, I will not talk with you until you talk with Edward first. And he said, oh, but now you're an elder, and I'm bringing this to you as an elder. And he said, no, let's practice Matthew 18. Let's talk to that person first. I think, far too many times, under the guise of, if you want me to be crude about it, might as well, since I'm doing the talking, all right? It's kind of like we're going to go tattletale to the elders about something we don't like. And by the way, you know what I do too. But sometimes in churches, you know whose ear to bend to get something done or get something stopped. And that's bad. And somebody says, well, I don't know what you're talking about. Well, you may be that person. Okay? All right? Do I become your enemy if I tell you the truth? All right? So that's something that's important too. Then number 11 says, I don't feel like I'm really on the line for anything significant. When you're going to be a leader, you will sometimes put your own life on the line for what you believe to be true. Now, you have to pick your battles. Sometimes they're just skirmishes. I try not to get involved in skirmishes. There are some things I'll go to the mat for, and I think that's what they're talking about. Then the last one is, I ask for way too many opinions before taking action. Way too many opinions. In other words, we're going to really kind of spend our time, well, it's back to what we said a while ago, putting your finger in your mouth and see which way the wind's blowing before you decide what you're going to do. And that's difficult. I don't mean by that leaders shouldn't seek to find out how something might impact those that they are leading, those that they are shepherding. But at the same time, it's important to understand what it is that we want to try to accomplish. Now, what I want to do in this session this morning is talk about levels of influence. And much of what I'm going to say comes right out of this book, Launching the Leadership Revolution by Orrin Woodward and Chris Brady. And I have some copies here that you can buy if you want to for a rather substantial discount. They're $16. It's normally a $24 book. You can buy it $16 or two for $30 if you want to. And this couple who's right here is going to take care of the handling of that for me anytime. You're not obligated, but if you want some more detail on this, these men, this book was a New York Times Business Week bestseller for a number of weeks, and I think it's got a lot of really fine stuff in what's there. As they talk about influence, they say there are five levels of influence that we all have. It begins, first of all, with learning. The first person you need to influence is yourself. In the second session this morning, we're going to be talking about trust. And I'm going to share some material there from Stephen M. R. Covey's book, The Speed of Trust. And he's got another one called Smart Trust that has come out. And one of the first things that he says, which is similar to this in the area of trust, is you got to learn, first of all, trust yourself. Well, if we're talking about levels of influences that we have, learn yourself. I'm amazed sometimes at how many times people quit learning in life. I talked to a fellow recently who said, I hadn't read a book since I graduated from high school. And I said, I'm sorry. It's incredible. I appreciate the fact that you are here this morning in this lecture. I appreciate the fact that you're here for lectureship. But do you know there are hundreds of others who would have benefited from this as well? Had they taken the time to first of all say, I'm going to learn? That's what you're here for. You're here to learn something. Hopefully, maybe you can pick up something. If you don't learn something, maybe at least I can reinforce something you already know. And that's good. Then performing. Performing has to do with being able to do what you've been called to do. And whether we're talking about elders in the church, whether we're talking about being a school teacher, whether we're talking about being somewhere. Now, it's kind of interesting, too, that John Maxwell talks about this from the standpoint of the first level being what he calls position leadership. In other words, you have leadership responsibilities because you've been placed in a position. School teachers are something like that. When you're a school teacher, you're leading a group of students in a classroom. There are other ways we can evaluate that as well, but we're going to go on. Leading itself, doing the very thing that you're supposed to do. Then they talk about developing leaders, and then developing leaders who develop leaders. Or what we really talk about has to do with what Paul told Timothy in 2 Timothy 2, verse 2. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 2 actually has four generations that is listed there. Paul says, the thing that you heard among me, among many witnesses, the same commit thou to others, or faithful men, who will be able to teach others also. Think about it. First generation is Paul. Second generation, he instructs Timothy. Third generation, he invests this to faithful men. And then fourth generation, who will be able to teach others also. In other words, it's an ongoing thing. It's an ongoing thing. It's kind of like having tradition that we follow. I try to tell the young people in my classes that tradition is not a bad word. There are good traditions. And what really always amazes me, and I love the young people I teach. They just got all kinds of energy and so forth. But it always surprises them when I can point out to them sometimes some traditions they have they didn't know they had. Because they think tradition is what you older folks have. You know. And it's always something I don't want to do. And the main thing the main reason they want to do it is because if you're over 40 and do it, then I don't want to do it. All right? And that's just it. And yet at the same time, we need to realize the significance of what's involved in that. Now let me get over here to this. Whoop. Hang on here. One of the best things I like about this book that I was just telling you about is a trilateral leadership ledger that Brady and Woodward came up with that allows you to evaluate your effectiveness as a leader. And they divide it into three areas: character, tasks, and relationships. Character, tasks, and relationships. And that's pretty important to be able to see where we are. Now, the beautiful thing about this is the way you can see where you are, evaluate where you are, and see where you need to grow. Now, on a scale of 0 to 10, you can evaluate yourself. By the way, there's a way you can have others evaluate you too. Just like any type of self-assessment that you might do, or like Maxwell talks about 360-degree input, all right? But you can look at where you are and see where you need to grow, and you actually, 1,000 is the best. If you're 10 on everything, 10 times 10 times 10 is 1,000. But if you have a 9 here, times about a 4.5, times about a 7 3/4, and then you come up with a number over here. Now here's something that is pretty important that they effectively point out in this. In any one of these, what happens if you have a 0? It cancels everything else out. Because 9 times 0 is what? 0. You know, and you can have a 9 on character, a 4.5 on task, but if your relationships are 0, guess what? You're not an effective leader at all. You cannot afford to be, like I heard an elder say one time when someone said, well, why can't we do such and such? And he said, because I said so. Then he followed it up, and I'm an elder. Now, what kind of concept is that regarding leadership? It's authoritarian. It's dictatorial. It is position equals power, which is, we all know, a very poor model for what leadership is. Here's what they mean in each one of these areas. For character, they begin with honesty. To use an old expression, honesty is the best policy. That's true. But can we really afford to be honest? Well, we should. Somebody says the truth hurts. Well, sometimes yes and sometimes no. But if we're going to have character, we need to have honesty. By the way, I'm not talking about reputation. There's a difference between character and reputation. Reputation is what people think about you. Character is who you really are. You have limited influence on reputation. Limited. The reason I say that is because people are people. And if somebody misreads something you do or misunderstands something you say, and they then take that to talk to someone else about you, your reputation may be different than what you really are. Are you with me? All right. You have limited power over your reputation. You have total control over your character. Total control. Kind of reminds me of the story I read about Mark Twain, who was under severe fire on one occasion, and he would not respond to his critics, who were actually taking him to task in the newspapers of his day. And when somebody finally asked him, "Well, why aren't you responding?" He said, "Well, my friends won't believe it, and my critics, it's not going to matter anyway." I like that. I really do. Honesty is the first thing they talk about. Integrity. Not being divided up. Integer. Integrity is a high value thing and becoming more so in the world in which we live because of some of the problems and difficulties that's happening in our society. Courage. I always think of the, now all of a sudden my mind went blank. I remember the line talking about wanting to have courage. What's the name of that movie? Thank you. Yeah, Follow the Yellow Brick Road. Courage. Courage is the ability to do what's right when it's right, regardless of the circumstances. That's a difficult thing to do. To me, it's also kind of like having to deal with conflict. There was a time in my life when I didn't have the courage to face conflict. I'll overstate the case because it's not totally true, but I would have almost done almost anything to avoid it. And that's not true anymore. Now, I don't look for it. All right, I don't like conflict, but I'm not afraid of it anymore because it's inevitable, it's going to happen, and sometimes you just have to have courage to confront. Now, you don't have to like it. It's kind of like discipline in the home. You got to discipline your kids. Any father or mother who enjoys discipline has got a problem. All right? Mama used to say, "Son, I love you so much, that's why I'm going to give you this whipping." I would say, "Mama, quit loving me that much." You know? But I now think of every one of those swats and what it was doing for me to try to reinforce something she knew I needed to learn. And that was important. Proper values based on absolute truth. Proper values based upon absolute truth. Value-based leadership is a pretty impressive area to study. And there are more and more people who are talking about the value-based leadership that is important. Do you lead based upon what you value? And of course, the obvious question behind that is, why do you value that? All right, because when it comes down to truth, or when it comes down to values, here's what I've always said. Everybody draws a line somewhere in life. The question is, where do you draw that line and why do you draw it there? And I think for people of God, it's the fact that we believe in absolute truth as revealed in God's Word. Now, God's Word is truth. It's absolute truth. My understanding of that may not be absolute, all right? But it doesn't nullify the fact that that's the foundation on which everything is done. Faith. Belief. Believing in individuals and how we believe in individuals as it relates to, I'd say, our worldview. See, every person I deal with, I must understand and remind myself as a person created in the image of God. And so I must value that relationship and not do anything harmful to that relationship and believe that they will do what is best for them and for society in which we live. Having a humble spirit. Having a humble spirit really goes back to something that Woodward and Brady say earlier in this when they talk about foundational qualities. One of the things they say that a leader must have is a leader must be honorable, which means teachable. Have you ever met somebody who you couldn't teach them anything because they already thought that they knew it all? A number of years ago, I was involved in a call for sort of a private mentoring session, and the lady who was leading the discussion that evening for about eight of us asked the question, what do you believe to be the most harmful thing in people learning? And we gave her all kinds of responses. In fact, I've got them written down somewhere because as everybody on the phone was writing, and I thought, oh, I mean, that's real good, I'll write that down. When we got through, she said, what y'all have said is fine, but there's something you've all overlooked. And I thought, I'm going to learn something here a minute, maybe. And here's what she said. Here's the most harmful thing that you can hear a person say when it comes to teaching. Oh, I know that already. You know, I know that already. Because see, if you think you know it, if you think you know it, you're not going to try to learn it. All right? Does that make sense? Okay. All right. Patience with others. For a number of years, I have told men that I'm helping prepare for ministry that if I could gift them with one thing, when they leave school to go work with churches, it would be patience. More than anything else, it would be patience. And I've got a little plaque that somebody gave me a number of years ago. I think my brother gave it to me, but I've got it in a very prominent place in my study at my house, and it says, be patient with me. God isn't finished with me yet. And I like that. It's kind of like saying, having a sign says, work in progress. And that's kind of what we all are, being patient with others. You'll want me to be patient with you, just like I want you to be patient with me. And if we can have that reciprocity, if we can have that sharing of one another, that would be helpful. Discipline. Discipline is an important part of a person's character because it helps keep you focused. Jack Canfield, who's probably known more than anything else for his Chicken Soup of the Soul series, you know, also has a book entitled Focus. Focus is all about discipline. It's about being able to zero in on and hone in on with your character things that are important for you to become everything that you can become. Along with that, probably I'd say almost a second cousin to that is self-mastery. Continue repeating what you do well. Learn from things that you don't do well so that you can master what is most beneficial to you as a person and allows you then to be of benefit to others you come in contact with. Tasks. Task is the second area they talk about, acceptance of responsibility. Somebody said years ago, responsibility really is just the ability to respond, and that's true in one sense, but what they're talking about here is a little bit stronger than that. It's being able to accept responsibility so that you don't try to play the blame game. I heard a number of years ago someone tell the story about preachers. And since I are one, I can talk about preachers, all right? But they said, you know, sometimes as preachers, we can be the most difficult in taking responsibility for things we don't accomplish that needs to be accomplished in this arena. Oh, yeah, I know what George is doing over such and such a place at XYZ Church. Why, if I was at that church, I'd be having that kind of results too. In other words, I'm not doing it here, but if I were where he was, where he is, do you understand what I'm talking about? It almost makes me think of, there's a book that talks about relationships and particularly infidelity and people who don't take responsibility for when they have moral failures in their life. And the book is entitled, The Grass is Always Greener. It's called the Greener Grass Syndrome. The grass is always greener where? Always on the other side of the fence. You know, and that's failure to take responsibility for where you are. Second, work ethic. I found it to be true. I heard it years ago by one of our older preachers in the brotherhood at that time when he said, you know, the laziest men in all the world that I know are preachers. And he said, you also need to be aware of the fact that some of the hardest working men in the world I know are preachers. It all boils down to a work ethic. See, as leaders, sometimes you're self-motivated, which means you have to not only take that responsibility, you have to have a good work ethic where you do an honest day's work for an honest day's wage. Kin to responsibility, accountability. Give account for yourself. I talked to a fellow one time who had had his second moral failure in life. As he and his wife were working through the difficulties and problems they were having, he called me on the phone one time very frustrated and said, I don't know what to do. I said, what's the matter? He said, my wife wants to know what I'm doing every moment of the day. If I go down to the store to get me something to drink or I go to the grocery, I've got to let her know where I'm going. I said, what's the problem? He said, why should I have to do that? I said, take a guess. You have to be accountable to her. Why? Well, because number one, she's lost trust. Do you want that trust back? Absolutely. I said, then don't be afraid to be accountable. To give account of yourself and what's going on. I really enjoy working with my young people in my classes. I have a rule regulation that says you're not allowed to use a cell phone in class for texting or any other thing. I normally have them take their cell phones out and lay them right on top, face down, okay? I forget to tell them that all the time, so sometimes I'll come into class and I'll just start lecturing and so forth, and you can look up, and I keep trying to tell them, hey, look, see? Because they think I'm blind up here, all right? And when they put their hands in their lap, you just kind of know what they're doing. This year, three times I've had to call students out on it. And I, every time, when approached them after class to say, were you texting in class? They've been honest enough to tell me the truth. And I always tell them, I want to tell you, I appreciate you taking responsibility and being accountable for the fact that you did something wrong. Don't let it happen again, because next time there'll be more severe consequences. I want them to be accountable, even when they do something that's wrong, all right? Next, willingness to invest time. Task takes time. We are so challenged in doing that in our day and age because we want things done quickly. We're the microwave generation. In fact, everybody already knows that we've gone from starting in America with the agrarian society to the industrial age to now we're in the information age. And the winner, they say today, is the person who gets the information the quickest. Well, that's not really true. It's the person who gets the information the quickest and acts upon it. It's not just knowing, it's the investing of time. especially when you get down to relationships that we're going to talk about in a minute. There's only one way to have relationships with people, and that's spend time with them. It just doesn't happen by accident. Tenacity. I've done some reading in recent years about Winston Churchill. Bulldog, some people called him, because of his tenacity. That means stick with it all the way through. I once had this statistic in my head, and I can't think of it now, but a person did a study one time about how many people had started books and never finished reading them. You know, get the first chapter or two read, and that's about it. My wife one time taught me a lesson regarding this, because I'm not that tenacious sometimes when it comes to reading, because if there's a book that I start reading and I don't like, I'd likely set it aside. But my wife was reading a book one time, and I asked her, what do you think? She said, I don't like it. And I said, well, why? Get you another one. She said, no, I got to finish it. I said, if you don't like it, why do you got to finish it? She said, well, I just need to finish it. It still didn't make sense to me until I started talking about and understanding about what it meant to just stick with it. To just stick with it. One quick story about this. A number of years ago, I had already started my PhD work up in New Jersey. And I had done everything that needed to be done except finishing my thesis for my MTH degree. And Dr. W.B. West and I were talking. And I had come back to Memphis to visit with him and took him out to lunch. I never will forget when he said to me, Brother Myers, aren't you going to finish that little paper that you started that we're working on together to get this degree? I said, why do I need to? I'm already accepted in a PhD program. I don't need it. Tell me a good reason why. And he thought for a minute and he said, well, Brother Myers, I guess my response to that would be we always need to complete what we start. Being tenacious. Well, needless to say, I went back and over the next year finished that up in order to obtain that credential. But because of that statement, if it hadn't been for that statement, that discussion with him at that time, I would not have done that. Perseverance is akin to tenacity, and we've touched on that a little bit. It means just stay with it all the way through to the end. All the way through to the end. And I'm going to have to hurry if I'm going to get through all of this. Excuse me. And then execution. I want to get to this relationships. And I'm going to go ahead and put all these up and talk about these so that you can write them down while I'm talking. Can you write and listen at the same time? Sure you can. All right. Relationships all have to do with people. So we're talking about, first of all, accepting people where they are. In one sense, that's a gift. In another sense, I think it's a learned discipline. Accepting people where they are doesn't mean that you take the bad and accept them in bad relationships. But you accept them where they are, knowing that everyone can always do better. Approving and appreciating people. How many times do we seek for approval? I know people today who go through life frustrated because they never got the approval of mama or daddy. They always wanted that approval but never got it. Robert McGee has a book on living a life of significance where he says, you know, one of the most discouraging things in all the world is people seeking approval from the wrong source. The source for approval we need is not of this world. And so if you depend on having to have approval for people in this world, you're going to find yourself on the short end of that stick. Seeing good in people. There's always good to be found in everybody. Now, I'll be first to admit, sometimes you have to look real hard. Some people are just like that. There are some people you have to look real hard, but everybody has something good in them. Encouraging people. One of my favorite lessons that I like to give is based on a book by Joyce Landorf Weatherly entitled Balcony People. I didn't buy the book, almost didn't buy the book one time because it looks so girly. I mean, the way it's printed, but it's a small little book. But taken from that and then going to a passage in the book of Acts that you're probably familiar with, there's a fellow named Barnabas, son of encouragement. And I always like to say to people, if you feel indicted because you can't be the saint that you have in your mind, like Moses or David or Paul, how about just being a Barnabas? When you read through his life and the way the Bible holds it out, we might not have had a Paul if it hadn't been for Barnabas. Because you know, the first time Saul stood before the church, the brethren said, not here. He's not preaching here. I can almost visualize somebody in one of those little gatherings say, I had an uncle who died because of him. And Barnabas put his arm around him and said, brethren, if it hadn't been for Barnabas, we might not have had a Paul. So you can be an encourager. I know a lot of what I am today has to do with people who were encouragers to me. Quite frankly, my mother-in-law was my greatest encourager. She thought I walked on water, leaped tall buildings in a single bounce. Always encouraged me. Caring for and about people and putting others first. Seek win-win arrangements. Helping people accomplish tasks, living the golden rule. All these, of course, are simple relationships that are important in life and what we want to try to accomplish. Now, what I want to do as we close out today, I say, wait a minute, y'all may still need those up there in case you do. What I want to do as we close out this first session day is also appeal to you to accept leadership responsibilities in life. There's this little book by Seth Godin entitled Tribes. Subtitle, We Need You to Lead Us. Here's kind of the imagery that he uses. He says, fish, school, birds, flock, people, tribe. And every tribe needs a leader. And he makes the case for what is badly needed in our world today is for you. You. I'm talking to you. To step up to the plate and give the leading in what is necessary. I want to say something that I haven't said until recent years, and I think part of it has to do with I sort of felt like I need to get to the point in my life where I'd earned the right to say it. And I'm not an alarmist. People who know me know that I'm not an alarmist at all. But we have a leadership crisis in churches of Christ of major proportions. I'm convinced, personally, based upon the corporate America style, a boardroom meeting, we make the decisions, tell the church what needs to happen, and that's it. I would rather like the imagery found, at least, in the title of two volumes that's been written by Lynn Anderson regarding leadership that is entitled, They Smell Like Sheep. I think we need more shepherds that smell like sheep, and the only way you're going to smell like sheep is get out among them. Know where they are. Enter into these relationships with them. Don't hold yourself aloof. I worked with a church not in this state, I'll just leave it at that, where that boardroom meeting style leadership was so heavy, as one of the ministers, the elders would allow me to come in and talk with him about something. Then when I was finished, they would say, okay, you're dismissed. We'll talk about it and let you know. Needless to say, my relationship with those men was minimal. Minimal. Because it was more like, we're boss, you're employee, we're going to leave it at that. So I hope this has been helpful to you, understanding particularly how this trilateral leadership ledger works, because it is something you can do that can help you gauge where you are and see what areas of improvement need to be done. And as I said before, this book will tell you more of what's there, and a lot more in that. This is just one little section out of that, that I've taken this and improvised with and even added to it some of the things that's there. Yes, sir?
Is that book aimed at church leadership, or is this just leadership?
That's leadership in general. Leadership in general. I know these two men. I know they're faith-based in everything that they say. But it wasn't written for churches. It was written for leadership general and principles. And same kind of thing with any number of people that I've been, since I started studying leadership about 5 years ago pretty intently, I have found men like John Maxwell, who used to be a preacher in a local church, now does this. There is, who did the Lead Like Jesus? I'll think of him in a minute. Anyway, any number of these principles. What I think is pretty impressive to me is we're finding a lot of people who are faith-based in what they say, who are saying, we've got to get this information somehow back out into society and get the principles wrapped around people as to who they are. Okay? All right, we'll have about a 10-minute break, and then we'll have our next class. Thank you.